When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome back to The Moments That Made Me with me, your host, Roxy Nafusi. I am so excited to introduce this week's guest, DJ Fat Tony. Tony has one of the funniest and most successful meme accounts on Instagram, is an international DJ, producer and LGBTQ plus ambassador for Adidas. He's also the host of his own podcast, The Recovery, where he speaks to guests about their journeys with addiction. I cannot wait to hear his three defining moments that led him to where he is today. Hi, Tony.
Hiya, how are you doing? You all right?
I'm good. Oh my goodness. So I remember meeting you in Annabelle's.
Right. Old Annabelle's or new Annabelle's?
It was old one. Oh, it was definitely the old one. Yeah. And I was definitely drunk, high, in not a good way. But it was good fun. And I haven't seen you in real life since, but have been avidly following your account. I mean, you're just making the nation laugh. How does that feel?
Well, you know, Instagram kind of is real life. Do you get what I'm saying? To a certain extent, it's kind of, you know, we live in this world where we put everything on Instagram or on social media. So kind of everyone knows what you're doing and knows where you are and every hour of the day. It's a little bit creepy, but it's kind of the world we live in. Yeah, I'm good, actually. I'm in a really good place, yeah. Coming out of lockdown again, you know, that always brings up a lot of anxiety for a lot of people, especially the last time did for me. But this time I'm kind of just looking at it in a different way. Yeah, I'm in a good place.
That's good. Okay, so tell me, where are you looking at it now that maybe you weren't before?
Last time I kind of did this big build-up for shops reopening. I kind of was like, oh my God, I go shopping. Oh my God. You know, But for 3 days prior, I was building it up and building it up. And then on the day, I had the worst social anxiety ever. I couldn't leave the house. I get, oh my God, I'm going to have to queue. Oh my God, what if I can't get in the show? You know, all of that stuff that goes with it. You know, then it went from there. Oh my God, I put weight on. I don't want to be seen. Oh, what if this doesn't fit? And it just went on and on and on. That was just about the shops, let alone about going back to work. You know, so this time I'm kind of like, you know, I have no preconceptions about anything. I'm not sort of like thinking, okay, Monday I'm going to go and do this, Tuesday I'm going to eat in a restaurant. I'm going to take it all in my stride and let it happen organically. You know, there's no big plans, there's no big dramas. Although saying that, I am actually DJing on the roof of Selfridges on Monday.
Stop, are you?
On the roof of Selfridges, yeah.
Oh, God, fam.
For the opening. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think it is so that, I don't know, I definitely find that when something's going to open or you feel this pressure to like rush to make a booking, I was getting anxiety about I'm not going to get in any restaurants because I haven't been quick enough. And then I was like, oh my God, I'm actually not in a rush. So I'm just going to wait and then go in my own time.
I think, you know, we've kind of been in and out of lockdown for a year. And I think there is no point in rushing any of it. There's no point in rushing coming out of lockdown. There's no point in rushing to go on holiday. You know, like Good Morning Britain wanted me to go on GMTV this morning and talk about my views on going on holiday. And I was like, no, I've already, you know, I've been on holiday for the last year, kind of. Mm. Do you get what I mean? I just want to get back to work.
Yeah.
It's not about lying on a beach. Because, you know, I went away last year during the pandemic and after the pandemic in the first break that we had. And I went away to work in Ibiza and a few other places. And it really wasn't a holiday. You know, they're going through exactly what we're going through. So, you know, the dreams of going away and lying by a pool and sipping cocktails and running along the beach don't exist. Because, you know, the pandemic's in every country that you go to. So you still have to wear face masks. You're still not allowed to go on certain beaches. You're definitely not allowed to lie by a lot of pools. So, you know, we had this false preconception of everything. It's kind of mad.
It's so true. And I actually think that is so reassuring to hear. So we are going to go in to your first defining moment.
I kind of think the biggest one really was the I'd like to call it the camel that broke the camel that broke the straw. I was going to say, which is kind of what, because you know, I at the time, you know, I was really, really, really lost and dying of addiction. And I was in a club on a Friday night called The Cross, and I worked there. And it was one of my residencies, and I was in the back room. I weighed at this point probably 7 stone. I'm 6'1", and I weighed about 7 stone. I had no teeth left. I'd pulled them all out due to certain drugs, the drugs that I was using. I had a thing called meth mouth, where I thought my mouth was running alive with animals. And I was kind of... insane, to say the least.
Yeah.
At that point, that night, I remember sitting rocking backwards and forwards, tugging at the one tooth that I had left. And I would sit like, which I thought was normal, but I would just rock backwards and forwards. And I was in the green room at The Cross, which was in King's Cross, surprisingly. And in walked my partner at the time. And for the last 3 years prior to that, he would come to clubs and drag me out and say to the people that owned it, oh, you're going to find him dead on the floor. So I got him barred for a lot of places. And this night he came in, and I'd already been out for about 3 days. And he came in, and I remember turning around thinking, oh my God, what's he doing here? I thought he was barred. And he came over and he put his hand on my shoulder. And instead of the usual, look at you, where have you been? That kind of drama. It was like a gift from God. Because what happened was he put his hand on my shoulder and said, what happened to you? And that was, those three words changed my life forever, because I looked at him at that point and I just thought, and I couldn't answer the question, and I burst out crying. And it really was that moment that defined everything, that changed everything, because, you know, I left the club then, and that was the night that I made the decision to change my life. Because up to that point, all I thought about was dying. I thought every day I'm going to die, and this is going to be my funeral. These are the music choices, who I wanted at my funeral. I had it all planned out. When most people would be like thinking, oh, where are we going on holiday? I was thinking about my funeral, because in a weird way, that's all I had to look forward to. I'd gone to the ends of hell, you know, in that 28 years of using. The last 10 was survival, and I'd really got to the end of the road. And that night changed my life forever. So just those three words that changed everything for me.
Oh my God. I literally have goosebumps. That is just like the most, I felt like I was with you in that room as you were describing that. So you said that you were using for 28 years.
Yeah.
And how long did it, like, because at the beginning, I suppose everybody starts to use in quite a casual way, in a way that they think. And at what point did it start to become, did it go to the dark side? Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of think, you know, that as I always say, there's a thin line between using and abusing. And when you're using drugs, everything's fine. And, you know, people can use drugs creatively, creationally, you know, and put them in a drawer and blah, blah, blah. But when the drug's suddenly becoming, when you start to abuse that fact and you're the last one up and you're the one still going 3 days later and everyone else went home to bed 2 days before, you know, you realize that that's suddenly becoming a problem. That's kind of when you get those alarm bells. That kind of just, you know, saying, oh, you shouldn't be doing this anymore. You need to slow down. That's kind of a good point to stop, do you know what I mean? But, you know, for me, someone like me, I don't have an off button. I'm an addict. It's in my wiring. I have an addictive personality. I suffer from the disease of addiction. So it washes over into everything I do. You know, the first 16, 17 years were fun. And the rest was survival. The rest of it was really, I'd hit rock bottom 12 years before easily. I'd hit rock bottom. But, you know, I had a job that enabled me to be that person. You know, I had a job that I could still leave the house and earn thousands of pounds from DJing. And it enabled me to stay up, and it enabled me to be the person that I created. I created this monster as such. You know, I opened up after hour clubs. I, you know, I created scenarios that enabled me to use.
Of course.
So, you know, while the money was coming, it never really got become a problem. You know, I always say that I never really had a problem with alcohol because it never ran out. And I never ran out, you know, apart from 6 a.m. in the morning when I'd be standing outside the shop waiting for it to open to buy more alcohol. But I never ever thought that I had a problem with alcohol.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's bizarre. You know, I knew I had a problem with Class A drugs and I knew I had a problem with so many other areas of my life, but alcohol wasn't on that list. And I'm a raving alcoholic. It's crazy.
Oh my God. I'm just like this. I just can't imagine the transformation that you've had, even just like, I'm still at the very beginning of your story, but I'm still like, wow, it's amazing that you're alive. Like, it's actually incredible.
Well, you know, to a lot of people, I wasn't. For years, I would come out of places, and when I started to look like my old self again, I started, you know, like up to 2 or 3 years into recovery after getting clean, people would say, oh my God, I thought you were dead. I would get it all the time.
No.
Cab drivers were usually the ones that said it.
No.
Yeah. They were normally the ones that said it, which was quite funny. You know, because they were all those old black cab drivers all come from the acid house scene.
Right.
They were like, you know, the majority of every black cab driver definitely was at an acid house rave at some point in their life. So that's what they remember you from. It's kind of bizarre. Yeah.
So you have this incredible moment. The hand from God is literally on your shoulder. And then how long does it really take from that moment till you are completely clean?
I'd say it didn't happen. Well, it definitely didn't happen overnight. Mm. But what happened was the seeds were planted and the process started. That was it. And on the Monday, it was the Friday night. The Monday I went to see my GP. He suggested that I go to a drug drop-in center, which I went to in City Road. And I started attending there and I managed to get myself a key worker and stuff. So the desire to stop using and to change my life was there. The pilot light had suddenly come on. The fact that I no longer wanted to die, that I wanted to live. So that, you know, but I had, you know, as I said, it was 28 years of learned behavior. And what was I going to do if I got sober? What was I going to do if I got clean? What was I going to do about those behaviors? Who was I going to become? I couldn't DJ again. In my mind, that's what I kept telling myself. You know, no one wants to employ a sober DJ. I mean, how can you DJ without drink or drugs? You know, and it was, you know, it was literally, it was a battle. It, you know, my addict was so strong and my addictions were so much more greater than I was. So for me, there was no option, but I had to go away. I had to go away to rehab. I went to rehab for 6 months. Well, it's actually 5.5. And I went to Bournemouth, and I always say, I don't know whether it's the thought of ever having to go back to Bournemouth that keeps me clean. it was a real process, and it still is a process today. You know, I'm 14, just over 14 and a quarter years clean, and, you know, I don't have battles with drink or drugs anymore, but I have battles with other behaviours.
Mm.
Because when you put one thing down, another one pops up, and whether it be food, sugar, sex, like, you know,
right.
Just you can go into flow with so many things. Anything that changes the way you feel, you know, for somebody like me, I have to work a really hard program to stay sane. Because I am, you know, I mean, seriously insane. I have a thing called uncommon sense. Most people have common sense. You know, I'll go to bed at 11 o'clock because you've got to get up at 7 to get a flight. Oh, I know, I'll stay up till 5 and go to bed. You know, that's kind of uncommon sense.
Yeah.
You know, I have sushi on a Monday and I think it's the best thing in the world. I'll have it till the following 2 Mondays afterwards. I'll still have it every night.
Right.
You know, it's just extreme stuff.
Of course. And also, I think it's really interesting when you said that, you know, there was so much behavior that you had to relearn. And I guess, you know, you really had to learn how to socialize again, how to have sex, how to deal with your feelings, it's like almost becoming childlike again and having to understand how to navigate yourself within the world from scratch.
You know, when you start taking drugs, you know, your life stops at that point. Your growth, your personal growth stops at that point. So for me, I would always be 16. You know, I started taking drugs at 16 and kind of from that moment, I was, you know, put in that jam jar of just walking around, breathing the same air in the same cycle for a very long time. And to come out of that, to actually learn people skills, to find out that you actually have things in common with people rather than what you shove up your nose or what you consume, is a really big thing. And, you know, just to actually work out what real intimacy is, you can't fathom it in your mind, because these are stuff that every grown-up person should have. But when you're so lost in addiction, and it's all that you care about is getting the drugs and being high and having so-called fun, you forget about anything else. You know, I didn't have bank accounts. I didn't have, I never paid bills. I never did anything.
Yeah.
It was insane, you know. I think I got my first bank account at 46.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, come on. You know, when it came to paying tax, I remember my dog got ill and everyone was like, "You not have pet insurance?" And I was like, I'm a junkie. Why would I have pet insurance? You know what I mean? It's like, oh yeah, hang on, let me put that money aside to pay for the dog's insurance. Get real. Come on, it doesn't work.
Totally. So, Tony, what is the best thing about being sober?
Oh, where do you start? Freedom. Freedom is the best thing about being sober. Being clean and sober. I have freedom. I can go and be and see and do whatever I want in a productive and in a positive way. Because, you know, before I couldn't do anything. I was a prisoner. And today I have complete freedom. I can hold my head up high. I know that no one's up behind. Like, I don't need to look over my shoulder anymore. I live in a world where everything is above board and is transparent. I don't have those secrets anymore, because secrets kill. And, you know, I have self-love today, which is amazing, which means I love myself, therefore I can love someone else.
Yeah. Oh,
and I never had that before. I never had that before. All I had was self-destruction.
Of course.
And so all I wanted to do was destroy not only myself, but everyone else around me. So, but that's not the case today. And that comes from recovery. That comes from work. That comes from being okay with who you are and being in self and actually being in the moment. You know, I'm no longer thinking, you know, I would be somewhere, you know, at a party, but I wasn't at that party because I was already at the next party or at someone's house afterwards in my mind thinking where I can get this from and where I can get that from. You know, I can meet people today and not wonder what they've got in their wallet that I can have.
Yeah.
You know, because that's the way it was. And today it's amazing. I just have, there's so many amazing things about recovery. There really is. It's just life is incredible.
I love that so much. It's so, so inspiring. And for anybody listening, because I think there are a lot of people listening that are, and I'm, you know, I used to speak about this all the time, where people kind of think, okay, well, I wasn't on, they literally will think, well, I wasn't on heroin, I wasn't 7 stone, I wasn't in the gutter, then that must mean I'm all right, I'm not an addict. But, you know, addiction is so insidious, right? And actually that we can be, I think, an addict very early on in our journey, very early on.
We don't all need to be on park benches drinking cider to be an alcoholic.
Exactly.
We don't all need to be pissing the bed to be an alcoholic of any sense.
Right.
You know, we all have these problems, and it's, you know, I was born with the disease of addiction. It's hereditary. My grandfather's an alcoholic. My dad had alcohol problems. But alcohol, you know, addiction is rife through my whole family. So it's definitely a generic thing with us. Mm. But, you know, when we judge ourselves by other people's actions, we've got a problem, full stop.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? If I think, oh, well, I'm not as bad as that, so I'll carry on doing this.
Yeah.
You know, we justify it. And the moment we start justifying anything, we know we've got a problem.
Exactly. I love that. Mm.
And I just think that what we're really good at deflecting. Oh, okay, well, I'm not that bad after all. Look at the state of him.
Yeah.
You know.
So true.
And that was the kind of way it was. You know, my friend used to do it to me and I used to do it to my friends. And, you know, I just think, oh, my God, I'm bad, but not that bad.
Mm.
You know. Because we're really, really good at taking other people's inventories, but not our own.
Totally.
And I really think that the minute we start taking our own inventory is the minute that we can ask for help. If you don't open your mouth, you don't get fed. And the minute that you get to that point where you think, okay, I've got a problem, I need to tell someone.
Yeah, It's true. As soon as you think it.
100%. You know, you don't need to be waiting to be on the park bench drinking cider. You don't need to be waiting till you've lost your house or your teeth or the person that you love most or any of that stuff. You know, the minute we start losing stuff is the minute that we really need to start gaining stuff.
I love that.
And that's knowledge and that's love and asking for help. You know, it's one of the biggest things you'll ever do is open your mouth and actually say, I'm an addict, I am an alcoholic, I need help. Because none of us ever want to admit it, that we've gone that far.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. It's so hard to admit. And also there's something almost, you know, like we say, how important it is not to have to wait till that point of the park bench. Because before then, I mean, I remember when I was the first, I went to NA when I was 22 and I definitely had a problem then, but I didn't actually give up until I was, and for another 6 years, but I had a problem then, but I was so embarrassed to say I had a problem because I was like, well, but I'm not losing anything. I haven't lost any money. I can afford it. I'm not as bad as that person. So there was almost like a kind of, I went into NA and saw all these people and thought, well, I'm not that bad. And so it was like I was, then you start the battle of, am I an addict? But of course I was.
I think, you know, that society makes, we grow up and we think, oh my God, look at that down and out. Look at that homeless person. Look at that tramp, as we would call it when we were growing up, you know, and we judge them and, you know, and we don't know what's going on with them. So the society drills it in us that we can't say that we're on that level or we're like that because we don't want our friends or our circle of friends, our so-called friends, they're not your friends if they judge you like that, to think ill of us and think, oh my God, she's got, look at the state of her. You know, because that's what we do in society. And I think it's such an uncool thing to be a drunk or to be a drug addict in that respect in normal society. Once you go into that world, it's actually, you know, people think it's cool and it's a badge of honor when you're actually in it. But, you know, I think it's so much more cooler to actually say to someone, oh, you know what, I've got a problem with this, so therefore I'm not going to drink. Because, you know, if you go out with your group of mates and there's six of you at a bar and you're the one that doesn't drink, five of those will say to you, go on, you're boring. Why are you not drinking? But the minute you say, I'm not drinking because I'm an alcoholic.
Yes, so true.
It's such an amazing thing.
It's so true.
You come out and, oh, I'm not drinking because I'm on antibiotics or I'm having a night off. They will badger you and they will badger you and they will badger you till you cave in till you drink, because that's what we do. But the minute you're honest, you say, you know what, I'm not drinking. I have a real problem with alcohol. I can't drink. That's when it changes.
Absolutely. Oh my God, I love that. Such good advice. Thank you so much.
It's about being honest. Be honest with yourself and then you can be honest with everyone.
I am here for that.
If they judge you and they look down their nose on you, they're not your mates anyway.
Oh,
you've
exactly.
Done yourself a favor. Have a good old clear out.
100%. I think when you change your habits with addiction, I mean, inevitably, the majority of your friendships will change, and you have to.
Oh, totally.
You have nighttime friends and daytime friends. That's what I used to say.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and the difference is today I have friends. I don't have different boxes and different rooms for different people anymore. You know, I have friends. I have friends that were with me when I used, and I have friends that are now clean. And the majority of my friends, we lead by example. You know, they see you get well, they see you change your life, they see you, you know, change everything, get a conservatory, and they all want a conservatory. You know what I mean? It's like we lead by example, and people see you being well. They don't need you to tell them how well you are. They see it in you. They see you. The minute you get that glint back in your eye is the telltale sign. There's nothing better than seeing friends that have gone into the darkness and come out of it, and they get that glint back, and you just think, wow, look at them. And it, you know, you want that, and that's what's so good about recovery is nearly all my friends are in recovery, and the ones that aren't don't need to be.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Lead by example. And you're so, so right. People can see it for themselves, and that is so inspirational.
Yeah, you know, you can't tell someone they've got a problem because they're not going to listen to you.
No.
You know, the amount of people that said to me, Tony, you need help, and I'd be like, yeah, whatever, go away. You know, and until we get to that point ourselves where we know we've got that problem and we're quite, you know, and we come to terms with it, that's when we're going to change. You can't change anyone. What you can, I always say to people is, just lead by example. If you're in a relationship with someone else that's using, you know, you choose to stay, right? You're in that relationship. You can walk away from that. Don't tell me you can't, because you can. However painful it will be, you can still walk away. But nine times out of ten, when someone's in a relationship with someone that's a really bad addict, either their codependency will keep them there and they can't do. But I always say, you're choosing to stay. So therefore, by choosing to stay, you need to change everything else. And it's a really difficult one, but just the more you shine, the more other people will either get blinded by that brightness, or they'll want some of that brightness. Mm. That brightness.
Oh, I love that metaphor. It's so true.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Vernon Kay.
And I'm Holly Mackay.
And we're here to tell you about our brand new podcast, Parenting Past the Pandemic, brought to you by Aviva.
Yes, we're going to be delving into a whole heap of parenting topics, from the generational gap to online safety.
And some of the big topics which have come up through the pandemic, such as helping to manage our kids' anxieties and how we can affect the world they'll grow into.
Parenting Past the Pandemic. Find it wherever you found this podcast.
So, Tony, let's go on to your second defining moment.
Oh, I'll tell you what it was. So when I was planning my funeral every day... I had four songs that I was going to play at my funeral. One of them was Womack and Womack, Teardrops. I was going to be brought into that. Then it was going to be, it was obviously Last Night at DJ, so my life was going to be in there, thrown in there. But then it was going to, there was going to be, I was going to get cremated to No More Drama by Mary J. Blige. Because I was so obsessed by that song. The words to that album, you know, I'd listen to it over and over and over again. And No More Drama kind of become my theme tune for a while. And, you know, and I would listen to it every day and it would make me cry, because I knew that I was coming to the end of life, really. I was coming to the end of the road and every part of my body aches, and that's all I would listen to. There's No More Drama by Mary J. Blige. And then about 5 years into being clean, I was doing a job in Paris. No, it wasn't actually. It was in Cannes. And someone said to me, "Oh, look, I want to introduce you to someone." And I went with them, and it was Mary Jane, and they introduced me to Mary J. Blige. And they said, "Oh, I want you to tell her that story." And I told her about how I listened to that story, you know, I was going to die, and now I'm clean and in recovery, and my life's changed, and blah blah blah. And here I am in Cannes at the film festival, DJing, and Mary J. Blige said to me, "That person wasn't you," and it was. It was one of those moments that made me realise how far I'd come.
Oh.
It made me really fill my life with gratitude. It was like, because up to that point I'd got clean and sober, and ego had taken over again. because I didn't really start to do the work on myself. What I did do was got complacent around recovery. Right. I got clean and sober. I'm well. Therefore, I don't need to do anything else. I don't need to change. And very quickly, I become a dry drunk. I become everything that I was before, but without the drink or drugs, to use it as an excuse.
Mm.
So, and then going to Cannes and meeting Mary Jane and her telling me that and spending the evening with her just changed my life again. It changed my thinking. It changed my outlook on things, the fact that, you know, how much gratitude I have for life, because I was taking so for granted yet again. And, you know, her telling me that that person wasn't who I was meant to be and the person I'm meant to be is the one that's standing in front of her, it was a very, really, really amazing part of my journey. It really was, you know.
Yeah.
At the end of my using, I'd be sleeping homeless. I'd be picking up dog ends off the street. You know, I had one pair of trainers, one tooth left, you know. And suddenly I'm in Cat, you know, it wasn't suddenly, but, you know, the process of getting clean and working on myself and change took me to Cannes, to the film festivals, and you know, it changed my life. But I was just taking everything for granted. And then that night just made me realize that I really have so much to be grateful for.
That is such an amazing story. Like, wow.
And I mean, I've worked for about 6 times now since then.
That is incredible. I think it is one of those things, isn't it? You want something so much, but then when you can get it and it passes you by, you don't even, you don't take the time to kind of see what you've done or what you've achieved or where you've got to. So for you to have that moment to really just go, oh my God, the last 5 years have been so transformative, and there was every chance that I wasn't going to ever see days like these, is life changing. I think to be able to sit in gratitude is the highest form of self-love that we can offer ourselves, is to just, you know, be truly immersive in the present moment, immersed in the present moment and grateful for all that it is.
Yeah, 100%. You know, there's been so many moments in the last 14 and a half years of recovery time that have just been just pinch yourself moments of like being in situations that you could never have dreamed of doing, you know, like being so many, there's so many to mention of all the people that I've worked with and worked for and I continue to work with, and I'm very blessed in that sense, because, you know, that comes from one place and one place only, and that's a place of recovery. Without recovery, I wouldn't be doing DJing in Donatella Versace's living room or working for British Vogue or any of the other incredible stuff that I do and headlining festivals and stuff, without any of that stuff. None of that would exist without recovery.
No.
We would not, you know, I would have been dead so long ago. And that's why I'm so full of gratitude today, because I can wake up and make the most of a day. Do you get what I mean? I've been given that chance again, and it's incredible.
And also, you can actually experience it, because if you had of DJed at Donatella Versace's living room and you were still high, you wouldn't have even been able to be in that moment or had the experience.
I would have probably ended up in the police cell for trying to steal all the stuff. Yeah. Because that's what I did, you know.
Yeah.
That's what I did. That's who I was. And, you know, today it's about being in the moment. It's about being present. And it's about doing the best job that I can in life. Not just about DJing, just but in life and in general.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you say that, you know, you'd got complacent with sort of some of the work, and I talk a lot in what I do about inner work. What does that look like for you?
Getting complacent.
Yeah.
Getting comfortable.
Yeah.
Nothing good ever comes from being comfortable. The minute that you get comfortable within anything is the minute that you become lazy, you take your foot off the gas, you stop moving forward. And life is about moving forward. It's not in a fast pace, just at any pace. It's about moving forward, whether it be one foot in front of the other or whether it be leaps and bounds. It's about moving forward. And what happens is when we become complacent and we get comfortable, we stop moving forward.
Yes, absolutely. Magic happens outside your comfort zone.
100%. You know, So, oh, I can't be bothered to do that. I want to stay at home. Well, maybe you should have been bothered to do that because you would have met so many new people. You could have opened new doors in your life that you will never know that have now been shut. You know, it's just about going outside of that comfort zone. Not, you know, no one's asking you to change your life dramatically. It's just little changes, little changes on a daily basis.
Yes, I love it. It's like one little new thing each day.
Don't walk the same street to the same shop every day. You know, just change it up, go down different streets, look at different buildings. You know, it's all about opening your eyes again. And what we do is when we get comfortable, we don't open our eyes.
Oh, I love that.
Just like blinkered again.
Totally. Oh, I could honestly listen to you all day. Don't tell me, what is your third defining moment?
Ooh, now I wanted to be really happy and like blah, 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 blah. But I don't know. I mean, there's been so many. Meeting my current partner, David.
Oh, tell me.
Yeah. Just, you know, I was like at the point in time I'd shifted addictions yet again, and I was like completely in the middle of a sex addiction, going crazy. And David had been messaging me, and we'd been planning to meet up. And then he came over one Sunday, and he came to my house. We did the deed, and we went to the ice cream shop where I used to go to take people to get rid of them.
To the ice cream shop.
So we went there, bye, and then go home, and then. So we went there, and then I said, oh, come back to mine. And, you know, within days, I knew that he was the one. I mean, I always used to think, oh, this one's the one every time, you know, like typical addict thinking. Yeah. Oh, I met the most craziest person in the world. He's got one, you know, he's an armed robber, blah, blah, blah. He's definitely the one, you know, the most drawn to the illness. But with David, it was totally different. He was like, there was this aura around him that just... I was scared, actually, at first, of getting to know properly, because I kind of just thought, oh, no, you know, he's too good. And we went on a date, a couple of dates, and then he moved in straight away. Within days, he'd moved in my house.
Oh, my God. And you just knew?
I just knew, yeah. And we've been together ever since. And don't get me wrong, you know, life on life's terms is really hard, you know, because I'm one of these people that could be in a room with 3,000 people and I will go blinkered with a blindfold on. I will walk to the most craziest person in there.
Right.
You know, that's what I do. I'm drawn to insanity. I'm drawn to the illness of addiction. And this time with David, I wasn't drawn to that because I didn't choose him. Do you get what I'm saying to you? It just happened. And we met through Facebook, and it just changed my life. And it's, you know, we're coming up to 8 years now.
Wow.
And I've always been in kind of like insane long relationships, but I've always been married, like, you know, married to the illness. And this time I'm not. And it's my proper first long relationship in recovery, a standout one. And
that's incredible.
You know, I've learned so much from this relationship.
What's funny is that you just said that, you know, one of the things was stepping outside your comfort zone. And then you said that when you first met him, you were almost scared of the kind of normality of that beautiful aura in a way. And isn't it amazing that in doing so, in doing something different, doing something that scared you, you met the one for you? It's so, I love that. So what has being in a relationship with him really taught you?
Just the fact that, you know, it's just made me draw myself back in again. You know, as my life got busier and my career has built and built and built, you know, so does ego comes into play, because ego comes into play because it's a place of fear. I get really fearful around success. I get really fearful around just success in general, because, you know, I've been there before and it ended in a really bad way. So this time I suffer with imposter syndrome as well. I always think that I'm not good enough. I'm not people are, you know, I can be on a plane flying somewhere at the front of the plane and think that when I get there, everyone's going to hate what I do. Everyone's going to hate my music. And I can build that stuff up. And what David's taught me on so many levels is that I am enough, and that what I do, people are booking me for that reason. And, you know, I see so much of myself in him. That's what it is. Aww. That's the quality of this relationship, is because he's a Sagittarian like I am. We're both fire signs. And I see my behaviours in him and he sees his behaviours in me, and we just get on really well. Not always. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. No one, can you imagine? No, you know, even when we argue, it's a lesson. Do you know what I mean? And that's never happened before. And I sometimes I think, oh, am I putting it down to old age, or is it because we've been together for so long? But, you know, if I'm doing something I shouldn't be doing, he will know I'm doing it.
Oh, I love that.
That's the magic.
It is.
That's the magic. It doesn't feel like magic at the time. you know, he's like, well, I know what you're doing. You shouldn't be doing that. And I'm like, and I would deny it. You know, the old behaviour will seep in. It's much easier for me to lie about anything because I find comfort in that, like I always did. But, you know, that then suddenly the programme will kick in and I think, what are you lying for? Just admit it. And I'm like, yep. I've done this. And then, you know, then it evens out again. And that's the good thing about David. With David, I've been able to learn that I don't need to lie about bloody the most stupidest of things.
That is so sweet. And how interesting. And I love that. It's such a powerful admission. Because I think we never really want to admit the things that feel comfortable to us. But when you have been, you know, you were an addict for 28 years and lying is a massive part of that. So, of course, that's going to be so familiar to you.
People wouldn't even ask me the time because they knew I was going to lie.
No. You know what I mean?
Like, there was never a moment that if you asked me for directions, I would tell you the wrong directions on purpose because, you know, that for me was like the norm. And, you know, I would lie on a lie on a lie on a lie and I would not know what the truth was anymore. And it's really difficult because I'm writing an autobiography at the moment, and it's just been so difficult remembering the truth because my truth is not the truth.
Right, of course.
Other people's truths are the truth. You know, anyone, when you're telling a story, we tell the story as to be the best part, to show us in the best light. And that's not necessarily the truth.
Of course.
So while writing this book, I've had to get so many other people to give their opinion on certain stories because my story are not the facts.
What a great thing to admit, though.
Other people's stories on me and how they see it. It's been very, very interesting, very eye-opening.
Yeah, have there been any moments where you're like, what?
The whole book. Like, literally, like the whole book. You know, there's loads of it. You know, it's like people say it, I'm like, that didn't happen like that. And then someone else will tell me exactly the same story. And I'm like, well, that's not how I saw it.
And how interesting.
It's quite remarkable. And, you know, the book's going to be out next year, which is incredible.
Oh, I can't wait to read it. Congratulations.
A really major, and I mean big, publishers, which is incredible in itself they gave us a really good deal. And I'm very, very blessed. Very, very blessed that someone's taken the time to actually think, okay, we really want to invest in this.
Oh, I'm so happy for you. Oh, congratulations. Oh my God, you have been such fun to talk to, and you share so much wisdom, and you inspire so many. And I just want to say, firstly, thank you so much for coming on. And if you had any advice for anyone suffering from any kind of addiction, what would it be?
Ask for help. Open your mouth. Tell your friends. And if they are your friends, they will help you. If they're not your friends, then you know they're not. You know, if you're going to judge, just open your mouth and don't be afraid to say that you've got a problem, whether it be the smallest problem. As I said before, you don't need to end up on a park bench before you realise it's a problem. And I don't mean a physical park bench. I mean, you know, a virtual park bench in your mind, because we all hit rock bottom in so many different ways. And I would say, you know, if you have got a problem, just open your mouth, because you don't get fed, and that's it. It's as simple as that.
Yeah. Thank you so, so, so much. I have just a couple of quick fire questions for you before you go. Okay. So the first one is, what is your most memorable book?
My most memorable book. I'm still writing it.
Yes, this is true. That's a good answer. Your favorite quote?
My favorite quote. Oh, what would be my favourite quote? Oh, it would have to be an Oscar Wilde one or a drama one. Do you know what I mean? Or, oh, Boy George, I'd rather have a cup of tea than sex.
Oh, yeah. I love that. That's a good one. I'm with him on that. Your most influential mentor.
Oh, okay. So my most influential mentor, I would actually say George again, you know, because I grew up with him and I kind of just been around him for so much of my life. And, you know, there's so many aspects to him that are and qualities that people don't see. And it's just, yeah, him. And I'd give Elton a go on that as well. I think Elton John is another one that, you know, has so many incredible qualities that you can only learn from.
Aww. Your go-to feel-good film?
Oh, it would be White Chicks.
I've never seen that.
Haven't you ever seen it?
No, I think I need to.
It's funny.
It's a proper like old school comedy,
yeah, it's
right,
just
isn't
hilarious.
It? Hilarious.
Easy,
yeah.
That and The Colour Purple is always a good one as well, I always think. Do you know what I mean?
Okay, adding it to my list. A moment where you felt most proud?
Getting the book deal this year, I think. And I also, I have so many moments of feeling proud, whether it be someone I'm working with, a kid who's just coming to treat, like out of treatment and wants a new way of life, and I help them go on that ladder of recovery. Those are proud moments. They're not the big achievements. I mean, I have so many amazing achievements, but I think watching someone get the glint back in their eye of life, that's the biggest, proudest moment.
I oh my god, I actually just got goosebumps. That's so, it's watching someone get the glint back in their eyes. Oh my god. A song that cheers me up,
George Michael, Freedom.
Yes. Top tip for dealing with stress?
Breathe. And I mean, just learn to breathe. Literally, honestly, I'm 55 and I've just like the last 4 months I've learned how to breathe properly. You know, at least stop and breathe, and breathe from your stomach and not from your chest. And just breathe and literally just take in the moment and just think, okay, I can do this. You know, self-affirmation is a really good thing as well for stress.
And the last question is the first person you called to share good news.
Oh, David, 100%. David.
Angel.
Kate. George, my mum.
Oh, I love that so much.
Yeah. And also Nadine, actually, who works with me. We you know, he's always on the. I'm always, guess what? And he's like, what? One of those moments.
Oh, I love that. And it's so nice that you've got so many amazing people around you.
It's taken a lifetime to get those people, and you know, those people are, you know, are the ones that have been there through thick and thin, and through famine and drought and harvest. You know, they're the ones that always be there, and they always will be, because they believe in you and they love you, and they see what you can they see what I couldn't see in me. They could see it all along, and that's why they've always be lifetime friends.
I love that. Thank you so much. Thank you, Tony, for an amazing episode.
Oh, you're welcome.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.